So is the truth of the past even important? What about the truth itself? Beyond the elusive moral ideal by which most of us were raised, being honest and doing good, does the truth really, really matter? To answer that question effectively, I would ask you another question. How do you kill 11 million people? Obviously, most of us have never even considered such a thing. Yet when I began to closely research our world's recent history, the last 100 years, that particular question made its unsettling way into my mind. How do you kill 11 million people? 11 million. The number is so large when the word people is attached to it that it becomes almost impossible to take seriously. Why 11 million, you might ask? What is the significance of that number? It is true, there is no singular significance in that number, and the actual number is 11,283,000, the number of people recorded who were killed by Adolf Hitler between the years 1933 and 1945. Incidentally, that particular figure only represents institutionalized killing. It does not include the 5,200,000 German civilians and military war dead. Neither does it include the 28,736,000 Europeans killed during World War II as a result of Hitler's aggressive governmental policies. Within the same parameters, we could have used the number of Cambodians put to death by their own government, slightly more than 3 million between the years 1975 and 1979. 3 million from a total population of 8 million. We could have used the exact figure of 61,911,000. That is the number of people who were murdered by the government of the Soviet Union, shown by their own records, between the years 1917 and 1987. But only 54,767,000 of the men, women, and children put to death by the Communist Party were officially Soviet citizens. That is 14,322 human lives for every word in this book. During World War I, the highest leadership council of Turkey's Young Turk government decided to exterminate every Armenian in the country, whether a soldier already on the front lines fighting for the government or a pregnant woman. This government institutionally killed their own famous scholars, their own religious leaders, their own children, and ardent patriots of their own country. All 2 million of them. We could have used that number instead. In fact, during our world's last 100 years, there are many different figures from which to choose. 3 million in North Korea, more than 1 million each in Mexico, Pakistan, and the Baltic states. The choices available and numbers of dead killed at the hands of their own governments are staggering. And in other places around the world, they are just getting started. But for our purpose, let's focus on the number that is probably the most well known to us, the 11 million human beings exterminated by the Nazi regime. There are many lessons we have learned from that tragic period in history, but one particular part of the story remains quietly hidden from even the most brilliant of scholars. It is the answer to one simple question. How do you kill 11 million people? Only a clear understanding of the answer to this question and the awareness of an involved populace can prevent history from continuing to repeat itself as it already has, time and again. To be absolutely clear, the method a government employs in order to do the actual killing is not in question. We already know the variety of tools used to accomplish mass murder. Neither do we need to consider the mindset of those deranged enough to conceive and carry out a slaughter of innocents. History has provided ample documentation of the damage done to societies by megalomaniacal psychopaths or sociopaths. What we need to understand is how 11 million people allow themselves to be killed. Obviously, that is an oversimplification, but think with me here. If a single terrorist begins to shoot automatic weapons in a movie theater containing 300 people, the lone gunman couldn't possibly kill all 300. Why? Because when the shooting started, most of the crowd would run, or hide, or fight. So why, for month after month and year after year, did millions of intelligent human beings, guarded by a relatively few Nazi soldiers, willingly load their families into tens of thousands of cattle cars to be transported by rail to one of the many death camps scattered across Europe? How can a condemned group of people headed for a gas chamber be compelled to act in a docile manner? The answer is breathtakingly simple, and it is a method still being used by some elected leaders to achieve various goals today. How do you kill 11 million people? Lie to them.
Okay, so the other thing Obama said in his chancellor-esque speech the other day was that you can't have too much regulation. He thinks that we don't have enough, even though there are hundreds of thousands of pages of government regulation in place today. So what is the real cost of regulation? Answer, look to the past. It is easy. Let's bring in Andy Andrews. He is the author of... You usually write happy, uplifting books,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're a lot. That's not a real touchy-feely title.
Yeah, okay. How do you kill 11 million people? This happened across my desk. I mean, that title is like, the whole black cover and everything. I'm like, ooh, this looks pretty dark. I read it, quickly.
Right.
And went over to Pat. And said, Pat, you have to hear. It was like Christmas Eve. And I said, Pat, you have to hear this. And I started to read it, and I stopped. I read it like a page and a half, and I stopped. And he said, No, keep reading. I've known him for 20 years. We've never done that. He always rolls his eyes. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll have to read that someday. I read the whole book to him.
Wow.
And it is tremendous. Tell me the premise. First of all, why did you write this? Because this is not what you write.
This is not what I usually write. But this was the answer to a question that I asked myself in prayer for 5 years. I feel the country going the way that you talk about, the way that David and Kyle are talking. And my question was, can I write something that doesn't say Republican, doesn't say Democrat, doesn't say liberal or conservative, and yet every single person who reads it would agree with it? That was my, and I didn't know that the answer, or that the question had an answer, frankly. But I do a lot of research, and I read a lot of odd history. And I even read the Nuremberg trial transcripts, and they, you pull a little...
I got a party with this dude.
You find a little thread, and you pull it, right, and go down a rabbit trail. And so I always had a problem with the Holocaust and that whole thing, how it happened, really. Not the normal questions people would ask, but virtually, how do you kill 11 million people? Now, we use that number because it's the one that is most familiar to us. Mm-hmm. But we could use any number of numbers. 61 million, we could have used that number. That's the number that the Soviets' own records show, the number of people that they killed of their own citizens.
This, by the way, is all footnoted in this. And communists have said, I've heard them say it, oh, that number, that just propaganda. Say the number again and give me the...
Well, the actual number is in there.
Yeah, the actual number. Let me see if I can... Do you remember which page it's on?
It's 61 million.
Right. And this came right from their own records, but that's not a number that you even have to use.
Right.
Because that includes non-Soviets that they rounded up and killed. The actual number of Soviet citizens that Stalin killed.
The actual number of Soviet citizens was 54,767,000. This is a footnoted number. By the way, that's 14,332 human lives for every word in this book. We could have used Turkey's number. They took 2 years to kill 2 million people from a population of 8 million.
That's amazing.
you know, on and on. We okay. list a lot of them.
So you're only using that number. This is not a Holocaust book. You're only using that number because...
Because we're familiar with it. We're familiar with the idea. And the thing is that I was always curious, you know, because you watch the movies and you see them loading them onto the boxcars and you think, why don't they rush them? You know, why didn't they fight? Why didn't they run? Because if a terrorist goes into a movie theater and there's 300 people in the movie theater and a terrorist starts shooting, there's no way he's going to kill them all. Why? Because when he starts shooting, some of them are going to run, some of them are going to fight, some of them are going to hide. So how do you get 11 million people to
line up
and participate in their own demise? And the answer, when I figured out the answer, it was so stunning, so scary, and yet so simple. And the answer is very, very easy. It's you lie to them. And there was actually a policy of lies that was set up that led these people right into the boxcars.
Okay. Listen, I have been trying to figure this whole thing out myself. I mean, that's one of the questions that I asked when I was in Auschwitz. How does this happen? How does this happen? And there is so much that I didn't know, and I have been researching and researching and researching. This really, you can read this in the bookstore, and I guarantee if you go to the bookstore and buy this book or read it in the bookstore, you will end up buying 5 copies for 5 friends. It is powerful, and it explains in that example, without saying Obama or, you know, anybody on the right, anybody on the left, Democrat, Republican, nothing. It shows you your responsibility right now and how it all begins.
If I can explain one little thing, because I created this book for people to use, right? This is a little bitty weapon that people can use with their friends and with their family. Now, I've talked for years and years to friends who disagree with me, and until I'm blue in the face. I don't know that I've convinced one person of my side of the argument. Now, there's an old story about a psychiatrist who had a patient who thought he was a corpse. And week after week, the psychiatrist would talk to this patient, trying to convince him that he wasn't a corpse. And so finally he had an idea when the guy came in and said, "Do corpses bleed?" And the guy said, "No, we do not bleed. All our bodily functions have ceased." So the psychiatrist took a pen out of his desk, pricked his finger, showed him the blood, and said, "There, what do you think about that?" And the guy said, "Wow, corpses do bleed." So here is the point. Here is the point. Anytime we confront somebody's worldview directly, what they already passionately believe, it's a waste of time. In fact, you may keep them so immersed in what they think that they become stronger in their beliefs. However, if we can find one thing that everybody agrees with, that we move together and then begin to go into other areas, that is the essence of influence. And so the one thing that everybody agrees on, that your aunt who is so crazy and your uncle who is a communist, the one thing that everybody, you can walk out on the street, ask everybody, you say, "Do you think that it's okay for politicians to lie or should they tell the truth?" Every one of them will say, "Oh, they should tell the truth, even if they're lying about it." Right? Because that's one thing that we do agree on. And so this idea, because this obviously this didn't happen, you know, immediately. But the policy of lies.
Go here.
Yeah, can I hijack your board?
Yeah.
There was.
We're obviously. Hang on just a second, Tiffany. We're obviously not going to do the other monologue today.
Yeah, I gathered that.
Got it. Thank you.
There was actually a written policy of lies. See, Adolf Eichmann was like the master. He was the one who was put in charge of the final solution for the Jews. And he ran this thing like a multinational corporation. He hired executives, basically. He responded with rewards to goals that were hit and the goals that weren't set. He fired people, got rid of them. So there was a policy of lies written down that allowed them to kill these people. The first one was, as the ghettos were surrounded, they weren't ghettos at that point, they were towns and villages and parts of cities, and they would surround them with barbed wire, and these later became known as ghettos, but they were explained as temporary necessities of war. You know, the front is going back and forth, we don't know where everybody is, we want to keep your children in place, so you continue your business. This is just temporary, continue your business, go to schools, go to church, do whatever you do.
Your protection.
For your protection. It was the very first lie.
Hold on just a second. I want to show you something. Has anybody been to Poland?
No.
You've been to Poland? Have you been to the ghetto?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not kidding you. Come over to the American Dream Lab doors, and you will verify that it's at least this big. The ghetto walls went from barbed wire, and you can see the changes in the brick, and they kept making it higher and higher and higher, right? It's that high, isn't it? The ghetto walls are that high.
Yeah.
And you can see the way they just kept adding to it and adding to it. And they were like, well, you know, we got to keep you safe. Well, there's some problems out there. All they were doing is walling both sides off.
Right.
And making sure that you didn't even, that it left the conscience and the mind of the rest of the population.
Right.
You were just invisible. You couldn't hear. You couldn't see. There was no possibility of what's on the other side of the wall. And so the other side of the wall just blocked it off.
Right. But it's temporary.
It's temporary.
Okay. And so the second thing they did, this is a beautiful lie. They sent officials inside the wall at night to meet with the Jewish leaders and take bribes from the Jewish leaders. And these bribes were in exchange for better living conditions. Now get this. Here's why they accepted bribes and they took the bribes. Is because the Jewish leaders went back and thought, well, if they're taking our money, obviously they're not going to kill us. Because if they were just going to kill us and take everything anyway, they wouldn't bribe us. So we're okay. See, they took the bribes to keep them from escaping, keep them from fighting. Saying, okay, so this is temporary.
It's the same thing with take your suitcase. Take your clothes, come with you, you're going to a gas chamber. Take your suitcase, bring it all. It's the same kind of lie. May I interrupt one more time?
Sure, absolutely.
I know I'm wrecking your rhythm here, but if we can look at today, it is the question that everyone asks me over and over again. Well, but they're capitalists. Why would they do this? It's the same thing.
Man, one of the most amazing thing about a lie is that we have been brought up to tell the truth. We've been brought up to do the right thing. And it's really hard for us to believe that somebody can look us in the eye and lie to us. It's just so, because over and over you say, look what he's doing. No. He said, but
right.
Look what he's doing. No, don't you remember in the speech he said he was not going to do that, but he's doing it. Yeah, but he said, it's hard to believe. So the last thing they did, and remember, they'll meet all the Jewish fathers now. They would send, Eichmann would do it himself, or send officials in and get all the Jewish men together. Now, you understand, there's thousands of them. Okay, and so less than 30 officials would go in, less than half of those armed, so less than 15 guns, and Eichmann or one of the other people, I found the exact speech that they used over and over again. If you don't mind, I'll read the exact speech. Jews, at last it can be reported to you that the Russians are advancing on our eastern front. I apologize for the hasty way we brought you into our protection. Unfortunately, there was little time to explain. You have nothing to worry about. We want only the best for you. You will leave here shortly and be sent to very fine places indeed. You will work there. Your wives will stay at home and your children will go to school. You will have wonderful lives. We will all be terribly crowded on the trains, but the journey is short. Men, please keep your families together and board the rail cars in an orderly manner. Quickly, my friends, we must hurry.
15 guns.
And they loaded them onto rail cars that were designed for 8 cows, no less than 100 in each car. And when they put them in and padlocked them, at that point, it was over. Because the trains never stopped until they reached death camps. And I've got the footnoted numbers of the death camps, and it's just, it's unbelievable to see that the German ministry, their own work in 1967 names more than 1,100 death camps and subcamps accessible by rail. The Jewish Virtual Library says it is estimated the Nazis established 15,000 camps in the occupied countries.
You don't have to go to Germany. They did it in Hungary by themselves. Americans did barbaric things to African Americans. I'm going to show you in a couple of weeks some things that I have from Salem, Massachusetts. I have the original round them up documents. They're witches. Don't tell me it can't happen here. It already has happened here. Yeah, it just looks different every time. It doesn't look the same.
Right.
We have to take a break.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to go here because you're not going to believe this. I've been making a list of the stars and the triangles. Of the stars and triangles. Because it's important.
Yeah, people
if
do
you
not
are
know this.
If you understand progressives, who's wearing the stars and triangles on both the left and the right? If somebody grabs power here, who wears the stars and the who are the first? Who are they? Because most people think this is about he's talking about the Jews again. Oh, he's talking about the Jews again. Oh, the yellow stars, that'll never happen.
Wait till you hear.
You're wearing a cleric collar. Let's see. I believe it was purple, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Purple. Catholic priests or any Christian leaders that disagreed. You're one of the first to get a star. You get a little triangle, purple triangle. We'll talk a little bit more about this and then go back to David Barton and try to tie all this together on positive things. The first step is to recognize that the truth matters. The truth matters. Next. No, if you can't sense it. We're talking about the book from Andy Andrews, How Do You Kill 11 Million People? And I know it sounds really bleak. I mean, does this sound like any book that anybody really wants to read? Is it like, okay. Trust me on this. It is not bleak. Because the answer is, how do you kill them? You lie to them. You lie to them. And if you look at this, and we're not going to spend much time on this, the stars, first, you know, the Jews, then the Gypsies and the Italians, the purple triangle was Jehovah's Witnesses, Catholic priests, and Christian leaders. Black was for vagrants. Blue for people who moved to Germany. Red, political nonconformists. In other words, people who weren't PC. Red was political nonconformists. Pink, homosexuals and sex offenders. Green, thieves and murderers. But here's what's important. Tell me about the green, the thieves and the murderers.
Because they were not suspect politically. They were the ones put in charge of the others.
So they took, there's no honor among thieves, right? They took the ones without any honor and had them police everybody else. It's really nefarious, and it all starts with lies. So.
And everybody thinks that it was all Jews. But of the 11 million people, only 6 million were Jews. 5 million of these people saw this happening. They saw the yellow stars before they got their own colors.
Yeah. Okay. So you say that it is truth that matters. We were having lunch today with David Barton, who I'll bring back in. But we were having lunch today, and we were talking, believe it or not, we talked about this, and then we went to a very optimistic conversation.
Right.
Because the number that people have to remember is not 11 million. It's 10%.
10%.
10%. How many people were involved in doing this?
A population in Germany of 79.7 million. At the height of its power, the Nazi Party only had 8.5 million members. 10% of that population who did something was able to move that entire thing into horror.
I want to show this real quick, and we'll do it some other time. This is an extremely rare document. David's collecting the happy stuff. I'm collecting the sad stuff. This is all in German. It was done by the American forces. And honestly, I have only opened it once, and I've only looked at about three pages. This is the original magazine printed on the spot when we found the concentration camps. It's full of pictures. In fact, the day I bought this, I didn't know it at the time. I had lunch with Elie Wiesel. He's in a concentration camp in this magazine. And basically, it was to show the 90%, this is what you have done. This is what you've done. Most Germans, the reason why it's so rare is most Germans took it and threw it in the fire because it is horrific.
Right.
But it does take 10%. But flip that around. If it takes 10% of the population to do this, it also means that only 10% of the population can turn it around for good.
See, the good thing, some people think that the people who don't vote, that's so horrible. And it is horrible in a way. However, it shows us the amount of people that we can get together. You know, Glenn last night said, I will. That this takes us to talk to these people. And frankly, I got this so that you could give it to somebody, say, read this before you go to bed. Just promise me it'll take you 15 minutes. And so, because if you look at what has happened in the past 25 years, there's not been a single presidential election that has been won by more than 10 million votes. Every single one of them has been that close. Yet, in the past 25 years, there's not been a single presidential election that has had fewer than 100 million people of voting age who did not vote. Of those 100 million, 65 million of them identify themselves as Christians. Now, what we're seeing is we have the ability to, because these people think they can't do anything. Well, see, this book is proof, these facts, this is proof. A very few amount of people can do something. And so we can. You know, there's 545 people in America right now responsible for every law, every budget, everything that's enacted upon the American people. One president, 9 Supreme Court justices, 100 senators, and 435 members of Congress. At our last census, there's 311 million of us, 545 of them. Now, there's some good ones in there, but this is our country. It's our country. And it is time for us to educate ourselves, just like David said, to educate ourselves, to educate our friends, to find out what we do agree on and move from there. And I promise you, this 100 million that's not voting, I mean, they will agree that the truth should be told and heard.
I will tell you, this is all about the truth here. And you have the same exact solution. You know when the Lord is really active, when he speaks through the multitudes. He speaks through the multitudes. I don't know how many times, David, I know you must have had this. Somebody will say, we had it today, you and I.
Right.
You're hearing exactly the same thing. What he's saying is, we have to find something that we all agree on. He's saying the truth. I'm saying love. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
The same thing. We're doing this big event here in Dallas. How many of you guys are going to the Dallas event? Okay, the Dallas event in January 7/28. I will tell you, if you want to go, I have some amazing stories to tell you about the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. It's amazing. They think I'm nuts. But already, I think it's now over 60,000 people have signed up to be notified when tickets go on sale. They've committed for the tickets. There are only 80,000 tickets, I think, for sale. If you want to go, go to mercury1.com right now. But it's the same thing. What can we do that reaches above all the politics and all the crap and we can unite on and say, wait a minute, this is a common thing that we can, a common building block that David will show us here.
Love, the truth. People feel like there's no hope, and that's why they don't become involved. But when you let them know that there is not just hope, but there is a proof of hope. And here it is, very simple. Take a few seconds to tell you. A proof of hope, even at the worst time of your life, is you're still breathing. If you're still breathing, that means you're still here. If you're still here, that means you haven't accomplished what you were put here to accomplish. If you hadn't accomplished what you were put here to accomplish, that means your very purpose in your life hasn't been fulfilled. If your purpose hadn't been fulfilled, that means the most important thing in your life is still ahead of you. The coolest part of your life is still ahead of you. So it doesn't matter how old you are, how sick you are, how depressed you might be, how broke you might feel at the moment, there is more.
You can say this because I'm thinking to myself, when you're talking about this, I'm like, boy, I really didn't believe that, in 1994, and how true that was. If I would have given up then, how true that was.
Right.
You're a guy who lived under a bridge.
Literally. Under a pier, yeah.
Yeah. You were homeless?
Homeless.
Broke? How long ago?
I'm 52 now. That was when I was 21, 22, and 23.
How long were you living under a pier?
It was about 2.5 years.
And why didn't you give up then?
You know, it was one of those things that I kept thinking about the next day. I had an old man that came into my life that stuck his hand out and told me the truth, sometimes when I didn't want to hear it, and he told me in a way sometimes I didn't want to hear. But I knew that there was more, that he showed me that proof of hope. That you're here for a reason. If you believe you're here for a reason, son, it's not over. And I believe, Glenn, I believe that you're here for a reason.
We all are.
I believe you're here at this time. And I believe that as important as we think Glenn is, he's no more important than you are and you are and you are. Because we can all together.
I have to tell you, I struggle really hard because I can't convince, it feels to me like I can't convince enough people the truth of how important you are. It doesn't work with David Barton or Andy or me just standing up and talking. It doesn't work without you and your puzzle piece. It doesn't work.